Yeah. Very good.
And on that note, I want to welcome everybody to the world according to that man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And to those of you who are downloading this or just simply playing it, you got to go to Rumble and check out the pre-conversation on rumble.com. All you have to do is subscribe to Ben's channel, Ben Stein. That simple. And we are joined tonight. Before that, everybody remember benstein.substack.com. Remember to give those likes on Apple and follow us everywhere. We are joined tonight by our favorite guest. She's our favorite guest. Why not? Mandy Gunasekera. And Mandy, tell people where they could find you and what you're running for.
You can find me on Mandy.ms. I'm running for public service commissioner for the Northern District of Mississippi. You can also follow me on Mandy Gunasekera on Truth.
There you are. And of course, the show would not be complete tonight without America's humble servant. He's an actor, he's a writer, he's a speechwriter, multiple Emmy Award winner. So much.
And yet eats so little.
Historian. Of course, he's a father, he's a grandfather. Most importantly, he is a husband. And second most importantly, he is the doctor, Benjamin Jeremy.
And I am the husband to the most wonderful woman in the world, the goddess of goddesses, a literally superhuman being.
There we are. And I could not agree with you more. I don't know.
Literally superhuman.
I should change my my virtual background since.
Yeah, I think you should. You look a little dark there.
It's just dark because it's dark because this room is dark. There's no.
What room are you in?
In the guest room. There's no.
I think there's some more light switches.
There isn't. They're all out.
They're all out. Well, that's because we need to get our housekeeper to fix them. That's a very good. I'm glad you told me that.
Yes. Hey, Brady. Hey, all. And I want to welcome everybody to the show. And Mandy last night had texted me about WSGs and the boycott and the BDS movement. And it was, but this morning I woke up filled with rage and anger as I have witnessed it in the past, the massacre in Israel with Israeli citizens being blown away as they left synagogue, as they left shul on a Friday night praying. And my anger, my fear, I hated the fact that my mother was going to have to see this after the Sabbath, and she was able to turn on the TV, and how devastated she was going to be. And all I could think of is, because they didn't release the names, I have two nephews and a niece that live there, and great nieces and great nephews that live there. And I was really devastated. The anger, Ben Stein, that came out in me, the rage of what I want them to do in retaliation. And there are going to be certain retaliatory steps. And both of us did not know that when you destroy a terrorist attack, even in Israel, animals, terrorists have rights, and it could take 3 to 4 months. They're trying to pass a bill right now where they could seal off the house immediately. You lose your residency, you lose everything for the family members of that.
If you're a terrorist,
there was an other terrorist attack. A father and a son were walking. There was one in a restaurant, but for the grace of God and the gun jamming, more people would have been killed. And people will continually make the moral equivalence. The New York Times did it.
Wait. I think, Judy, you owe it to us, your panelists, and to the viewers and listeners to tell us what the New York Times said, because it's, as you related to me earlier today, it was so horrible. It's just hard to believe.
Hold on a second. Let me, I will find that for you in a second.
It's not urgent.
The New York Times, a gunman killed at least 5 people at an East Jerusalem synagogue, New York Times reported, after a deadly month in the occupied West Bank. And the Israelis went after terrorists in, I believe it was Jenin, if I'm not mistaken, or Yenin, however you pronounce it. And they killed a cell. And this is what happens. They kill, they slaughter. They, it's just they... it's they, I'm sorry, I don't have the words because I'm so angry about this. And I watched one of the people of the new cabinet was there with his yarmulke on Shabbos trying to console people. And it's just heartbreaking. And it's devastating that this is allowed to happen. And the reason I bring up Mandy's, what she brought up last night, was because the UN, our State Department, the BDS movement really allow this to happen.
They allow it to happen. And not only do they allow it to happen, but I guarantee you that had this been spoken out from the rostrum of the United Nations General Assembly, there would have been widespread cheering and applauding on the part of the delegates from most of the member states. And that is a horrifying commentary on the way of the world today. But Jews have always been victims, and it's a wonderful thing that Jews are in a position now to fight back. They're in a position to arm themselves. I think it's a mistake for Jews in this country to not arm themselves. And my son, who is a South Carolinian, an avid gun collector, I think he gets the point. And I think I certainly do, and my wife does. She's not Jewish, but she gets the point as well. I wish more Jews got the point.
Perfectly said. And I was talking to Mandy, I was talking to Ben about this, and you could explain to us what the ESG thing is, because we will need an update on that. And we are about learning on the show. But getting back to what Ben said about with the United Nations, this we have a government right now, and as Ben has pointed out to me, the State Department has always been anti-Israel. But right now we have a State Department that's extremely anti-Israel. They're talking out of both sides of their mouth, like they do with everything else, especially with policing in our country, and just like they do there. This jackass Blinken's about to go to the Middle East and have bilateral talks with the Palestinian Authority in Egypt and Cairo. And I'm like, there is no such thing as Palestine, people. There is no such thing. It does not exist. These Arabs were Jordanian. It was Jordanian rule until 1967. They're Jordanians. They are not Palestinians. And Mandy, it's really gut-wrenching, our State Department and our government right now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that it's such a turn from the Trump administration, where he moved the embassy to Jerusalem. Like he said, he had the back of Israel. And look what happened when there was a strong Israel with a very clear line of support from the United States. You had the Abraham Accords. Since then, you've seen a breakdown of that very hard work. And that level of stabilization, to the point you wake up every day and you don't know what's actually going to be happening in some of these sacred areas. And back to what I sent you the other night, Judah, ESG. So for those who may not be familiar, it stands for environmental, social, and governance. It's a form of investing whereby the standards for investing align with wokeness. It's trying to push corporate America and the capital influence they have in everyone's lives towards this woke culture and this extreme ideology. And what I sent you last night was this exposure that there's certain companies that will give companies a lower rating if they do business in, quote, disputed territories. And these disputed territories include East Jerusalem, the West Bank, and the Golan Heights. So any company providing basic services to Jews living in those areas get dinged in terms of how these consultants rate companies for ESG standards, and that inhibits their ability to get access to investors and capital that are obviously a necessary part of keeping their business alive and growing.
And keeping the whole world supplied with breakthroughs in technology, especially medical technology. Israel is, it was until recently, the second largest innovator in medical patents and medical breakthroughs. I think it has just recently become the largest worldwide breakthrough provider of medicines, surgical techniques, any kind of medical.
The Intel chip,
Well, they're incredible at inventing things, and they're incredible at inventing things, especially that save lives, whereas it's very, very hard to find Arab and anti-Israel groups that hate Israel. There are lots of those groups, but they don't really contribute much. I mean, they contribute violence. They're very, very good at violence. I mean, the skill of the terrorists at violence is not to be denied, but their skill at doing anything useful or that God praises in any of the holy books of Judeo-Christian religion is nil. And that's just a very, very sad situation. And yet, as I said, they have the votes in the UN. Now, Mandy, you're a young woman, young and very intelligent woman, but and Judy, you're a very young man. You do not remember Barry Goldwater. At least I don't think you would.
I'm a big Goldwater fan. But
yes, but I know that you're too young to remember seeing him. Yeah.
Yes.
And he had a simple line, which was get the U.S. out of the U.N. and the U.N. out of the U.S. And there's no particular reason why the United Nations should be in the New York City at this point. I mean, that was done when we had just won World War II and when we were riding high on hopes that there was going to be a new world order of freedom and democracy. We did not realize that the Soviet Union was going to block us at every turn in terms of achieving any kind of peaceful world or any kind of world free from the danger of thermonuclear, as Bush would say, thermonuclear wars, we would say. We didn't really understand any of the doom that lay ahead because we were in the path of worldwide Bolshevism.
Extremely well said. And I have a quick question from Mandy from Cosma, and then I want to get to you, Mandy, about what Ben just said. Practically speaking, has ESG had a tactile effect on investing as of yet?
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was the adjective? The what?
A tactile effect on investing as of yet.
I mean, by that, do you mean a measurable effect?
Yes, I would imagine.
Okay. Yes, the answer is yes. And it's most obvious in the oil and gas arena. If you talk to some of the mid-size and smaller oil and gas guys that takes a lot of capital investment to get started. They put a lot on the line. And so maintaining access to a steady supply of credit is crucial to their business operation. A lot of that has been denied or significantly pared back to the point where they have to go to alternative businesses for credit. Otherwise, some of them have either significantly cut back operations or are on the verge of having to cease operations. And this is all done under the E rubric, the environmental rubric, which is essentially a mechanism to implement net zero policies and divestment away from fossil energy and affiliated infrastructure to development. So absolutely, yes, that's been happening on a micro level. And on a macro level, this is one of the complicating factors to ongoing inflation, because it continues to constrain supply of the energy we need to keep the economy lubricated and going. And this administration's constraining supply through the regulatory might of the federal government. You have corporate investors straining out access to credit, which also crunches domestic supply, and it makes everything else more expensive, which then lends itself to exacerbating inflation. So, yes.
Let's go back to the sad, horrifying truth is that the environmental movement is being used as an anti-Semitic lever to tear at Jews and tear at Jews, especially in Israel, but also in the United States.
It's odd that you use that word because of Unilever, but go on.
No, but Unilever is a Jewish company. Anyway, at least the Lever family were certainly Jewish.
They own Ben and Jerry's. That's by
well, I don't know about that. I know, but
who boycotted and divested from parts of Israel?
Sure, that was the Unilever family founded the Lever brothers a long, long time ago.
Okay.
Anyway, the this tragic connecting up of the dots of in so-called environmentalism with racism, especially racism against Jews, is now a very ugly stain upon international life and especially international business. Now, America is the world center of capitalism and the world center of business innovation and business productivity. If the ESG and boycott groups are going to have an effect here and slow down investment here, coming from here, we're in real trouble. And I hope and pray that won't happen. I am proud and very, very, very grateful that one of my friends is Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett has made very, very large investments in Israel. He's a big believer in Israel. He is not cowed or frightened by the environmentalists or the people who are claiming to be environmentalists but are really using environmentalism as a cover up for racism. And as long as Mr. Buffett and people at that level, although there really isn't anyone at that level except for maybe Mr. Munger, once Mr. Buffett and people of his courage and strength and nobility of character are gone from the scene, and I hope that won't be for a very long time, I worry what's going to happen.
Yeah, and to your point, Ben, and in the article, there are many states, almost every state in America that are banning these types of companies, especially ones that support the BDS movement. So they immediately announced that. What were you saying, Mandy? There's like a three strike rule with the it was so hard to figure out that article in the New York Post. But I do know that there are a lot of states that are banning these companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
There's a lot of pension funds, I should say.
Right. States are banning what they're doing is so it's the investment houses, BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street are the top three that they mention all the time, because I forget what the exact percentage is, but they control, I'm just gonna loosely say, a majority of capital investment that is out there to the tune of trillions of dollars. And so they have a lot of sway, and a lot of that money comes from state pension funds. A lot of that relative financial power comes from their involvement with state pension funds, state contracts, things along those lines. So treasurers, largely state treasurers, there's a group called the State Financial Officers, and there's another F, I forget if it's Federation, but SFOS. It's a group of state treasurers that are banding together to prohibit states from having contracts with any of these companies that engage in this type of problematic ESG-driven behavior, whether it's anti-Semitic or whether it is counter to a state's economy. For example, West Virginia was an early on adopter of this because they are a resource-based economy, largely tied to coal. So why in the world would they send their state pension and contracts to companies that are using their financial might to put the coal industry out of business? So there's a lot of that pushback starting to take effect, and it is a good thing.
That's wonderful news, Mandy, and I thank you for bringing it to our attention. I think it's great.
And explaining
what a fine public servant you're going to be.
And explaining it extremely well. And speaking of, Kevin McCarthy actually made a promise to get rid of Ilhan Omar, and who's a raging anti-Semite, and he wants to kick her off a committee. But we have these at least three or four Republicans at this point who are anti her getting kicked off committees because they don't believe in tit for tat. I would love to meet these people and say, but you're okay with anti-Semitism. You're okay with as terrorist attacks are happening in Israel as we speak, you guys are okay with this anti-Semitic woman. I'm being kind there, Ben. And it's like, this is the problem that people have with Republicans. We vote them in. Democrats always towed the party line. And with Republicans, we just never freaking know. You know what? We're at the point where it is tit for tat.
Oh, no, it has to be more than tit for tat. We're not talking, I don't think we Republicans are talking about getting revenge on these people. I mean, they deserve that revenge taken upon them. But what we're talking about is trying to prevent murder of civilians coming out of synagogue, just as we would want to prevent murder of Presbyterians coming out of a Presbyterian Sunday morning service. I mean, we don't want to have anybody killed under any circumstances, any innocent people killed under any circumstances, but certainly worshipers of any faith should not be killed coming out of a service. And we hope and pray that something can be done to make it easier for people to worship in peace. And I'm afraid that if we just look away and say it's not our business, or we're too good for that. It's not going to happen. We have to take a firm line. And as Mandy so aptly said, now we're in a new world, in the sense that we have, for the first time in a long, long time, raging anti-Semites in Congress. I mean, not since the days of Pitchfork, Ben Tillman, and other really horrible, horrible people have we had raging racists and anti-Semites in Congress. But now we've got them, and it is shameful that the Republican Party is not going forward with getting them moved to the least sensitive positions possible.
No, you're Mandy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's this brand of polite politics that the American people clearly do not want anymore. I mean, that's really one of the driving forces why President Donald Trump got to being president of the United States, because voters are so tired of not hiring, but sending someone to Washington, thinking that they're going to have the backbone to back up the things that they actually say on the campaign trail. And then when they get to Washington, they become this polite society that just neutralizes positions that they said they would take when they were on the campaign trail. So I think the voters that that those people represent, they should take note, and they should find someone else, because there is no place for anti-Semitism in this country, and certainly not in areas of significant consequence and power. And I hope McCarthy does fully follow through with what he said.
Well, I hope so too. But I want to go back to Pitchfork Ben Tillman, whom I happen to follow a little bit because my son is lives in, and daughter-in-law and granddaughter live in South Carolina, and so I follow their political heritage pretty closely. Well, the things that this man was saying in the 20s and 30s, it's very hard to believe that they were being said in the halls of Congress, but now we see it being so done again. And it's hard to believe it's happening, but it is happening. And I hope that as Republicans, we would be in the forefront of standing for decency and protection of the innocent everywhere in the United States, and not just in Washington, not just among the beautiful people, but everywhere.
No, you're completely right. And I apologize to the people on the live stream. I'm not sure why the rants are not working right now. But if I'm not answering the rants, it's not because I didn't want to see them. If you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And we are joined by our guestess of the bestesses, Mandy Gunasekera. Mm-hmm. And of course, America's humble servant, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And Ben, you and I on the car ride over, you brought something up, and you know, one of the lines I like to use is people staying in their lane. Sometimes people are really good at certain jobs. It doesn't mean you're going to be great at other jobs. And I was referring, and I was saying to you, I was using college football and sports as an example, Mandy, of like, if you work for a state school, there's only a certain amount of money you could get. But if you, but they figure out a way to get you more money. And I was saying to Ben, governors are sorely underpaid. If it were me and I were Florida, I'd be paying Ron DeSantis $10 million a year. I'd sign him to a 5-year deal worth $50 million guaranteed. And I say the same thing with Abbott. We need, they've got to figure out something, because Ron DeSantis is a brilliant governor. I don't know if he's going to if he's going to become president, but God willing, one day he will be after Trump. But there's got to be a raise in pay for some of these people. I wish there were. I wish there was a private conglomerate that could pay him more money.
Oh, they'll be paid perfectly well. I assure you, Judah, that when people leave positions of high consequence, to use Maddie's fine word, in government, they manage to make quite a good living. They're not starving. When Dwight Eisenhower left office after being Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, and after being head of Columbia University, and after being president for 8 years, and a very, very successful and well-loved president, he drove himself back to his home. He had one motorcycle cop that went with him as far as the border of Maryland and Pennsylvania, because he was heading up to Valley Forge. And then his son, David, who I'm proud to say is a close friend of mine now, went with him and helped him navigate the rest of the way home. That was a long time ago. Nowadays, these people live like Maharajas, and there's not going to be any want, a problem of want of material goods among these people. But I think there is a moral authority that we want to answer to here. There's a moral authority that is saying, State Department, we know you're never going to change. You're never, never, never going to change. You are founded on the basis of racism and anti-Semitism. You always have been. You always will be. But please don't get in the way of letting the Israelis protect themselves. We don't expect you to send a cop into every synagogue or into every home in Israel, but please don't get in the way of the Israelis protecting themselves.
Extremely well said. And Mandy, the last person that got involved, got in the way of the State Department was Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And the person before that was Richard Nixon, and a very dangerous group of people to go against, as we've learned. And well, one of the things I was also referring to, I was thinking about, Republicans really do have a very strong bench. It doesn't mean they have a very strong bench that everybody is meant to be president. And Mike Pompeo, I think, was an excellent Secretary of State. I think Nikki Haley was probably the best person that we've had at the UN in many, many, many years. And I just wish these people would recognize those. I wish they were more recognized, or they recognized that the position they were in was the position that they were meant for. And as we're coming up, and we're going to have, obviously people are going to be running for president, I just wish people knew their own limits. Like, Nikki Haley's got no shot at becoming president. But that's just my humble opinion, Mandy.
I wonder why you think that, because I find her quite compelling. I wonder why you think that, Judah.
Because she doesn't. She's considered a she's be considered a rhino by many of the Republicans. She's considered more on the globalist side of things, of the war stuff. That it doesn't fall. Mandy, correct me if I'm speaking incorrectly.
No, that's right. That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, that's her reputation. I think it's up to her. I know she's got a nonprofit where she's going around and meeting with groups. And I've heard a lot of people who have been a part of those groups and attended them coming back and having a little bit different perspective, but she's definitely been painted that way. And I actually think some of it is concocted in the way that the media does. Someone who is as promising and talented and has the gumption that Nikki Haley actually does, they're going to try to paint her in a way to undermine her ability to be successful in broader politics when it comes to conservatives and your more right and your closer right of center people coming together behind one candidate. So I think some of it is probably concocted. But I will say, back to your point, the State Department, I had to work with them when I was at EPA, and it's the most arrogant people that work there. And the ones I had to work with were all in the climate department. And they're just the worst of the worst, because they lose sight of being Americans. They lose sight of who they represent, and they shift their focus to being accepted in this global elite group of people and appeasing those interests versus representing the best interests of the United States. And when I and some of my colleagues walked into the room with a very clear direction from President Trump, as simple as it was to put America first, we butted heads in the worst kind of ways. And they are just a very catty, arrogant type people. And the day that the State Department can be significantly shrunk will be a great day for this country.
And by the way, that is the way the State Department has always been. This unfortunately, it's not new. The State Department has been this way forever. And they were this way to an extraordinary extent before World War II. And were notorious for coddling Hitler, coddling the Japanese, and not standing up to them in any way whatsoever. And unfortunately, that sticks with them. They come from a certain kind of elite background, well, what I would call well-to-do anti-Semites, well-to-do racists of various kinds, and that's the way they've always been. It's going to be very hard to change them. And the fact that you can put somebody in there who's not white doesn't mean he or she is not going to be an anti-Semite, is not going to be arrogant, it's not going to be racist, and especially is not going to put America last instead of putting America first.
And I was laughing just a little bit when you said that, because anyone who works at the State Department, and I do want to make a distinction between some of the Foreign Service officers that actually are very good and patriotic at their jobs and go into harm's way on a regular basis. I know some of them, and they are very great. It's the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. that pal around in these globalist circles that are the worst of the worst. And I'm laughing when you said that, Ben, because they will literally remind you of their pedigrees and how they went to these negotiation schools in Brussels and whatnot, and how esteemed they are and how esteemed they should be treated. That's literally how these people are.
Well, it's frightening, but true. I'm reminded, and I think I've mentioned this on our wonderful show before, of a man who's been a family friend. He passed away not very long ago, forever. And he was a real high ranking, wealthy State Department, CIA personality, very, very, very high ranking. And when he graduated from college, he was such a good student that he was given a job as a foreign correspondent for Time Magazine, which was, just getting started, and was an extremely powerful magazine. And his first assignment, which was considered the plum of plums, was to interview Adolf Hitler. And he interviewed Hitler, and I spoke to him, this gentleman, many, many, many years later. I would say roughly mid-80s. Mid-90s. And I said, what was Hitler like? Was he, did he strike you right away as being insane? And this man, who, as I say, rose to extremely high levels within the government, said, oh, no, he wasn't insane. He was just a politician trying to work things out and get ahead in the world he was in. And no, he wasn't insane at all. I said, sir, he authorized, empowered, pushed the murder of 6 million Jewish people, civilians, women, children, old people. You don't think he was insane? No, just a very good politician.
Oh my gosh.
And I want to read you a quote that I pulled up today from Golda Meir, and to show you the difference, and really to show you exactly what was going on during 73 and for the great Richard Nixon and what he did for Israel, to pull back to Israel. He wrote, as President Nixon says, presidents can do almost anything. And President Nixon has done many things that nobody would have thought of doing. And then she quoted about Henry Kissinger, who is Nixon's guy. In Israel, we read from right to left to Henry Kissinger, U.S. Secretary of State. That was her message. And he said, because he said he's an American first, Secretary of State second, and a Jew third. And to the people that know, Richard Nixon was a Jew for it. He was Israel number one. I mean, what he
I wouldn't say that was your name, but he certainly saw that he had the moral power to do a moral right that no one else had ever done. This was Nixon, Judah. And we've talked about this a million times, and you are that's why I'm so proud that people always think you're my son. This, and I wish you were, Mr. Nixon, who gets criticized, sneered at, just treated so dirtily, he was a person who had more moral strength and more of a moral compass than any president I think has ever had in this country, possibly with the exception of Abraham Lincoln. And yet, at the State Department, he was dirt.
And the same thing, as I said to you today, could be said for Donald Trump, what he was willing to do for Israel. And I think one of the hardest times he had, he basically said, you guys could do whatever you want right now. I'm not going to say anything. And sadly, they didn't do the steps that were needed to take while they had Trump as president. And there are videos going on around in Gaza of them celebrating. of them absolutely celebrating and cheering and setting off fireworks about the Jews being killed, and which will never reach the light of American media. It will never, they will never show this on the news. New York Times will not be showing this, Ben. And, but this is who they are. This is who
this is how they reacted to 9/11. When 9/11 happened, immediately some very ingenious Arabs came out with some watches that showed, as the second hand moved along, showed airplanes crashing into a skyscraper and an explosion. And these were selling like hotcakes among Arab and Muslim children. And these are the people to whom we are supposed to be even-handed and cheerful and not take any sides against them.
No, it's you're absolutely right, and it's absolutely remarkable. And Mandy, it just goes to show you how Ben brought up a couple weeks ago such a great point in the difference between the 70s, the way the media was able to control everything because it was much smaller. It was a much easier narrative when you had a certain amount of news organizations. But on a global level, now this is where we see where Google and the massive search engines are able to suppress videos like this and will suppress videos like this. This video should be trending on good. The second you open up, Mandy, and you know what I'm talking about when it's showing what's trending, this should be people celebrating and shooting off fireworks and celebrating a 14-year-old boy being killed, a married couple getting killed, an Israeli-Ukrainian getting killed. And they never will. They will never show it. And it's pathetic.
It's Judah. I was, before we were getting on tonight, I wanted to read the latest news. And so I Googled, first I Googled synagogue shooting, and then I wrote Jerusalem, and nothing came up on the initial search, nothing. So then I clicked the news button, and there was one article that came up, and it was a CNN article, but it didn't quite characterize things in the way that you so clearly just did. It really neutralized, they kind of covered, yes, there were some people shooting fireworks and shootings that allegedly were in response to these deaths. But it was a very neutral article, and that is the only one that showed up on Google. I have this question, Judah. I asked you this the other night, but Ben, I would like to hear your response to this as well. Why is this trendy? Why is this anti-Semitism trendy among the woke elite?
I don't know, but I think my wifey, the world's most wonderful person, said a long time ago, she is herself a Presbyterian. Her family have been Presbyterian since Presbyterianism was founded, that it's almost genetic. It's almost as if this anti-Semitism were in many, many human beings, millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people's minds, genetic. It's just something that's in their heads from the moment they're born. And as my wife would say, it's heart-rending, but there it is.
You said something even better.
It's really, really, really exploding on college campuses.
You said something even better before to me today. And I can't remember exactly what it was you said, but you said it's always been there. It's just changed clothes.
It's changed clothes. It's always been there. And now, instead of it being in the Ivy League clothes or in the most expensive floor at Brooks Brothers, it's now wearing hippie clothes or hip hop clothes. It's now wearing a clothes of racial equality. And let's turn everything to anti-racism. Only at the end of the day, it smacks the Jews.
You're exactly right. And Mandy, just so you, because not a lot of people are aware of this, and I was bringing this up with Ben, is Yasser Arafat brought a gun into the UN.
While he was speaking, while he was at the rostrum speaking to the General Assembly, he was wearing a pistol, loaded pistol, and bragged about it and got wild cheers from many members of the General Assembly. Get the U.S. out of the UN and get the UN out of the US. Barry Goldwater said it. The media tore him to pieces over it, but he was right.
But didn't so many Republicans also tear him to shreds?
Oh, you bet. You bet. You bet. You bet. The Republicans, so many Republicans who we would now consider classy, what shall we say? I don't know. I don't like to say Ivy League in a sneering way because I went to Ivy League schools, but people just sneered at him, but he was telling the truth.
So, Mandy, Ben and I discussed this a lot, Mandy, and it's really hard to come up with answers for this. It's a very hard thing to figure out how this happened, how this occurred, how Israel became this hated nation. It's very hard for us to, with the Jewish stuff, it's very hard. We can't. And I'll go to what his wife says. It's just in the genes, as I said to you last night. And I don't know how else to explain it, Mandy. I wish I had a better explanation, or Ben did, but
it's there. And it's interesting. It has now spread like wildfire to the African-American population in the United States. And that's where the real witch's brew of anti-Semitism is bubbling up. And that is really unfortunate because Jews were so incredibly instrumental in getting civil rights for African-Americans. Mm-hmm. And that has been completely forgotten by the African-Americans. And instead, they sneer at the Jews. Not all, but enough.
You're completely right. And Mandy, this goes to the point, you know, Ben named the show tonight, the Second Amendment, Second Commandment. And it's really important for people. Right now in Israel, one of the things they're legislating is that people could immediately get guns. It's pretty much you sign up, and I'm sure they have mental health checks on everybody there. They're basically saying to this, because the police and the army can't do everything. As we're learning here, they've been neutered and spayed, and spayed. They can't. We really, in our country, if you could get a gun, Mandy, get a gun.
Yeah, I mean, I have three. I've got two pistols, and I've got an AR 10 feet from me. And I think everyone in America should be that way, and you should know how to safely use it and protect your family if necessary. And that is a right, a fundamental right. In this country that we are absolutely guaranteed, and nobody should accept any degree of chipping away at that, because I am a petite individual. And if I don't have a gun at my disposal, someone could very easily physically overtake me and cause harm to myself or my family. And I'm not going to stand for that. And the only thing that can really neutralize that is a gun in my hand and my ability and experience to know how to effectively use it. And I think that should be explained. That should be a part of basic education. I will say, when I was in junior high in Mississippi, there's a course called Hunter's Education, because there's obviously a lot of hunters in this area. But it teaches kids at high school in seventh grade some safety tips about hunting, but also safety tips about firearms and how to handle them appropriately. And honestly, I think we should rejuvenate those type of educational programs, not just in rural places and in Mississippi, but all across this country. So yeah, I mean, I think that in anyone who has a question about whether or not when they call 911, their police force is going to be able to show up in time or reliably be there when they need them, arm yourself, be ready for it. Because why would you otherwise take that chance?
And why indeed? I mean, we know, those of us who own guns, and the Stein family has lots of guns, especially my son. What's the point? We're not going to hurt anyone who doesn't deserve being hurt with them. What's the danger of people like us having them? And a few years ago, when we were having demonstrations in Beverly Hills, where, there's a beautiful mint and I just lost it. Anyway, a few years ago, when there were demonstrations in Beverly Hills of crowds marching around shouting, "Eat the rich," my wife and her nurse were terrified, and they locked themselves in my wife's bathroom with two guns. and they felt a lot better. And I have no doubt whatsoever that my wife would have used it. And I know for sure that her maid slash nurse would have used them. And why not? Why not? That's what they're there for.
You're exactly right. And we've lost Mandy's video for a second, but it doesn't
matter.
We remember what she looks like.
It doesn't matter if you are not, if you're listening to this via the audio. But Ben, you brought up something that nobody wants to talk about, which is often what you do, which is the rate, which is the anti-Semitism in the Black community. And it is, it's horrific. And nobody calls them out on it. There's you and there's a few other, because they're scared to death to talk about how the African-American community has become always was so damn anti-Semitic.
They weren't always. They really weren't always. That is not true. That they weren't always. If you read the writings of Martin Luther King Jr., a genuinely great man, he very, very strongly pro-Israel and very, very strongly pro civil rights for everyone in America, including Jews.
Okay, I'm referring to the Louis Farrakhan's. Who has been, but he's got a massive danger. It's a massive, dangerous following. What these people are being allowed to, what do you mean? I mean, I know you're going to say, what do you mean, you people? But Mandy, I was saying to you last night, I was talking to Ben about this in the car, the horrible incident in Memphis was committed by five Black police officers.
All Black officers. There were no whites, rather.
Right. And you are not hearing this sort of narrative going on. Obviously, it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism, but this was Black on Black crime. And it's not, Mandy.
Most of the crime by Blacks is Black on Black crime.
Almost all, yes.
No, that's right. Well, and okay, especially the Memphis case, this isn't a racist issue or a racism issue. This is a breakdown of the police force. I was actually reading this information later today that the five individuals, the police officers that were involved in this incident, in the shooting and the death of Tyree, they should have never been hired to begin with. But they had changed the standards by which police officers hired individuals within the Memphis area. And so they hired people that, for whatever reason, would not have normally passed a background check / met whatever the standards were before. And because of that, they became police officers. They were relatively new hires. And we obviously see that they abused their positions in a most horrific way. So this is a breakdown in a bureaucratic and institutional structure, which it's common. It is unfortunately common, but unfortunately in this instance, it has resulted in the death of someone who shouldn't have been.
Not have died for this. I mean, we all have to die.
No.
But these people, the killers, were members of a gang. I mean, they're the Scorpions. They were members of a gang.
Yes.
I mean, they were hired, and the people who hired them knew that they were members of a violent street gang.
Oh, I thought,
and
no,
they
I
were
thought,
police
I thought
officers.
I thought the Scorpions was the name of the unit.
No, the Scorpions might have been the name of the unit, but it's not a unit that was confined to these five people. So I guess the police department was hiring people who were members of a violent gang.
They were
might have been a small gang, but it was a gang.
Yeah, that's right. And they gave them a badge and a weapon and the ability to wreak havoc against those that, those they didn't like, or those they felt they had done them some wrong by their own version of the law, not the actual law.
And what's terrifying to me, Ben, is that more policemen are going to be scared to death to do their job, which not only hurts our community, which hurts the Black community, as we've discussed the most.
It hurts them most. Hurts them the most. I mean, crime against Blacks by Blacks is the main Black crime problem. I mean, any crime committed by anyone of any race against anyone of any race is a terrible thing. But it's a myth that this idea of a policeman fighting against crime is a way of white people suppressing Black people. It's not that at all. I mean, that's not even remotely that. That's a gigantic lie spread by the Democrat Party.
And it's an extremely dangerous lie. And it's an it's a horrific lie, and it's being perpetrated by the media. And I don't know how, I really don't see how we get out of this quagmire, Ben. I mean, I don't know how. I don't know how we build our police force, rebuild the police force. It does need to be rebuilt. I mean, there are policemen that are retiring. There are people that don't want to be policemen.
No, nobody wants to be a policeman anymore unless he's just a person of extraordinary morals, character, and moral strength, or if he or she is in a very rural area. I mean, there are plenty of people who want to be police in the part of North Idaho where wifey and I have some homes. So that's fine. But in most other parts of America, why would anyone want to be a policeman? I mean, why would you want to do that? I mean, unless, as I say, you really have a very strong moral commitment. I've reached a stage where I just think the future of America is teetering in the balance. And I'd like to see Mr. Biden stand up for it. I'd like to see the media stand up for it. I'd like to see people on the network media show, network panel shows stand up for it, stand up for the rights of everyone to be safe. Not just well-to-do people, not just well-to-do Black people, everyone.
You're completely right. Mandy?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that is... The police force is a utility for the community to maintain law and order and stability. And we need to remember that they need to be supported. And those structures need to be in place to prevent bad people from getting in those systems to corrupt it for their own good or their own interpretation of how the law should be applied. And that is what happened here. And the other aspect too is, these are bad people doing bad things in a breakdown of a local system. It is not a justification. Never, in my opinion, is there a justification to riot in the way that has become so commonplace. Why is it that not just Memphis, but DC and a lot of the metropolitan areas of all the states, police had to expend extra resources because they were expecting riots in the wake of this information coming out? Why is it that as a society, we've gotten to this point where this horrific information comes out, which we can all agree is problematic, yet it seems to be encouraged and stoked and supported by some in the media to get out there and throw bricks at windows and burn down cars and cause violence to very innocent people? That just, it should not be an accepted response. And we've got to clamp down on that as well, because since the summer of love, i.e. 2020, when you had all these BLM riots going on, it seems to be more of an accepted position and something you don't deter, you just plan for and hunker down and deal with. And I frankly do not want to be in a place where that is the approach to this problem.
I don't think Americans deserve to have to hunker down in their own country.
I as we've run out of time, I think something that's become, every time you're on the show, has become something even more clear and more clear and more clear, Mandy. You really need to figure out a way to be, the way you message stuff, especially the NRA stuff, especially the Second Amendment stuff, and so many things, even the ESG. You really need to teach. You should be giving.
We want you to be president.
Yeah, you need to be giving courses to the Republican Party.
We want you to be president
about how to speak. And we want you to be president. We truly.
That's it. We're not going to pull any punches here. We want you to be president.
Yeah, I'm giving it 5 years, and 5 years, and it's our Mandy 5 year plan, and because I want to be alive for it. So
I do too.
I want Mandy Gunasekera, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Tell people again what you're running for and where they could find you.
I'm running for a public service commissioner in the Northern District of Mississippi. You can follow my work and my campaign at Mandy.ms and any of the social media platforms. But my favorite and the best one is Truth Social. Follow me at Mandy Gunasekera.
Perfect. And you could find, I just have to say this, I'm not blowing smoke. I beg of everybody to go to thespectator.org and read Ben's pieces for the last 30 years and 40
That's
years.
That's a lifetime.
It's really worth the read. Hey, Newsmax is coming out with the book, The World According to Ben Stein. And I really encourage people to do it, because everything Ben has not only has been a part of history, but he's been prophetic about the future. And it's very sad to say, but you were honest. And when you were wrong, you promptly admitted it. And that is Ben Stein. And that's The World According to Ben Stein. You can find Ben, of course, on True Social. You can find him at benstein.substack.com. You can find him on Newsmax and spectator.org. And Ben Stein, I need a little levity. And just want to say a prayer for the people in Israel. And but it is Saturday night, Ben.
I'm not going to say a prayer. Instead, I'm going to show you a picture. I don't know if you can see this. This is the eastern shore of the Chesapeake Bay near the Trad Avon River. And if you see these two little chairs in front, that's where Big Wifey and I are going to be spending eternity. And in the meantime, I'll just say, God bless America, God bless America, and God, please protect us from those who hate America. Thank
Extremely
you.
Well said.
I'm too tired to sing.
God bless you all. Have a great Saturday night. Mandy, thank you from the bottom of our hearts.